You're listening to the Untaming Podcast.
We were the child.
Here is your host, Emily.
Hello, welcome back to episode 6 of the Untaming Podcast. If you enjoyed last week's episode with Phoenix, then we have another episode in a similar style next week with Kate in Melbourne. All of the guests in the first 4 episodes of this podcast have said they'd be happy to come back in the future. So if you have any questions for them, Darsha Narvaez on the evolutionary needs of children, Arthur Haynes on nutrient-dense foods, Hazel Boot on natural human movement, or Robin Grill on early infant memories, feel free to get in contact either through the Untaming Facebook or Instagram pages or the email address untaming.podcast@gmail.com. But for now, let's hear from aromacologist Nadine Artemis. What she has to say will make you think twice about the use of sunscreen, sunglasses, and commercial soap. We were pressed for time in this interview, so I didn't ask many of the follow-up questions that I wish I had asked, but Nadine has also said she'll be happy to come back in the future. Nadine Artemis was born in, grew up, and currently lives in Ontario, Canada with her life partner Ron and their son Leif. Nadine Artemis is an innovative aromacologist. She develops immune-enhancing formulas and medicinal blends for health and wellness. Her creations, along with her concept of renegade beauty, encourage effortlessness, eschew regimes, and inspire people to rethink conventional notions of beauty and wellness. Nadine's official biography begins when she first combined flasks of essential oils to recreate Nina Ritchie's L'Air du Temps for a school science fair. These botanical inclinations led her on adventures in creating organic beauty balms, reviving elixirs, and effective oral care. Nadine opened her first store, Osmosis, in 1994. She is the creator of Living Libations, an exquisite line of serums and elixirs for those seeking the purest botanical health products on the planet. Nadine has received glowing reviews for her formulations in The Hollywood Reporter, The New York Times, Vogue, and The National Post. She also addresses gatherings at conferences and appears on television, radio shows, and on podcasts. Nadine holds a degree in women's studies, and her thesis was on the female orgasm. Nadine has published multiple books on dental health and also Renegade Beauty, Reveal and Revive Your Natural Radiance, Beauty Secrets, Solutions and Preparations. Last night she had about 8 hours of sleep, and for lunch today she had a smoothie. Nadine, welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here.
I first came across you when I heard you talk about your products at Living Libations. And to be honest, my initial impression was, I don't think any of this really appeals to me. I very rarely use beauty products and I just didn't think that this would be of any interest to me. But the more I listened to you speak, the more I realized just how wrong was my initial impression of someone mixing essential oils haphazardly, sniffing them and saying, yeah, that's nice. Not only was it far more than beauty products, health and wellness formulas that I could definitely see myself using. But the science involved, wow, far from being the willy-nilly vision I'd had of just making things smell pretty, you actually use the ingredients with the appropriate medicinal properties for whatever it is to be used. Like I read out in your introduction, there are immune-enhancing formulas and medicinal blends for health and wellness. And even more than the products themselves, what appealed to me the most was the science behind the creation and your extensive knowledge of it all. That is what compelled me to continue listening to and further seek out many podcasts with you, and ultimately to ask you to be on the show. But where did you learn all of this information? Your knowledge of skin health, dental health, heliotherapy, nutrition, and what's really infrequently used commercial products and what they're doing to you is immense. And I've never heard of a university speciality that teaches about the true realities of basically all synthetic products and the deep misconceptions in our culture surrounding health. So what first inspired you to jump into this rabbit hole, and how did you ultimately develop such substantial knowledge?
You're right. There is not a university course on this subject. And really, most of the fascinating things in life aren't found in a university degree, I find. I found my time in university fully preparing me for my path in other ways. So I've always been a very self-directed learner and always really focused on, driven by what I'm excited about and what I'm passionate about. And so I can really now, after having been on the planet for a few decades, really seeing like from the subtlest, tiniest choices, all the breadcrumbs along the way that have really brought me to this present moment. And, I was completely in love with nature as a child. You know, it was just being outside and in nature. I was lucky that we were surrounded by a lot of nature. And, I was able to play in the forests and the lakes and as any child does, make potions and concoct with mud and different ingredients and stuff. And then inside the house, I was always, going into my mother's bathroom and concocting things with her cosmetics, taking really lovely cosmetics and then mixing it with the stuff underneath the bathroom counter too that had like skulls and crossbones on it as well. So not all my experiments have been successful. I had that sort of as a background, and then just being in a family of three women and being the youngest, I would get all that sort of cosmetic hand-me-downs. And so as a teen, my bathroom was just filled with bottles and bottles of things. And I was even experimenting with that or mixing perfumes, or I would crush, my white Christian Dior eyeshadow into my like Crabtree and Evelyn lip balm and, sort of making things from there. But then it was so cool because I had to do a science fair project in grade 9, and I didn't know what I was going to do it on, but then I did find this book on making cosmetics at the library that was really awesome. And there was a whole chapter on perfume, and it talked about like perfume and where it came from. And that just wasn't available knowledge at that time. I mean, you just went to the store and bought perfume. There was no, or you saw the ads, but there was no like really understanding of it historically. And so I was just fascinated by, they were really speaking about ancient Egyptian culture. And my great grandfather was the president of the London Egyptology Society, and he would go on archaeological digs, and we had his paintings in our house because he would go as like the illustrator for the digs because he was a very good painter. And so there was just a whole mystery in the history around perfumes I was enthralled by. And this perfume said that to make, it talked about the ancient distillations and how they were made from flowers and myrrh and frankincense. And that to find the ingredients, the modern version of that is something called essential oils, and they could be found at a health food store. So we drove, to the bigger city where they had a health food store, and I got my first whiff of essential oils. And it was completely fascinating to me to smell something just so like, orange or ylang flowers or cinnamon. And it just resonating quite differently than what I was used to. I can't say I knew at that moment how to discern naturals and synthetics, but I definitely something was lit in my brain that was different. And so I made that creation, and that was really cool. And then, the Body Shop was around, and that seemed exciting because you thought it was like environmental products. So there was that whole thing. But then I got to university, and I'm, making my own food more than at home, and doing grocery shopping, and really just sort of questioning and what I was eating. And then I was skipping school, and I, was watching TV, and there was a great show on this book called Diet for a New America. And I saw Lisa Bonet talk about the ecological and health impacts of food, like all the factory farming and all this sort of stuff that I hadn't heard of before. Again, this was a different time than today, and there was no internet where you could read, 1,000 blogs on the endocrine disruptors of paraben or the, how much water it takes to factory farm a cow. So that was fascinating. And then I also happened to, on my way home, I had to pass by this really sweet health food store every day. It was like in a house, and it was called Grains and Beans and Things. And I bought every book and every bean in there. And eventually I just was like reading everything that I could get my hands on, even a book on like how to read labels at the supermarket. And that really led me to understand, you know, looking at secondary ingredients and really that it said this, but it was that. And it really made me wake up to, and this was all in a very short period, like a month, of like, oh my God, then what am I putting on my body in my body care ingredients? And then that was sort of the revelation too, that, you know, even the Body Shop, it was just BS, and that there was no peach in the fuzzy peach bath oil. There was no pineapple in the pineapple face scrub, you know, that the cucumber face toner had never seen a cucumber. And it was just like types of alcohol with synthetic fragrances, and that all of this was just, you know, petroleum based products dressed in another type of finery. And it really wasn't real. And so that's when my beauty care got real, and I really understood many in different ways on how to take care of my body. So maybe little things that as a teen I'd experienced, like a headache or a stomach ache, I now had new understanding of why that occurred or how I could help it. And then with my own, I was making my own food, and never to eat organic or, I mean, sorry, never to eat processed food again, only to eat organic food from that sort of month of understanding, that revolutionary month forward. And then with that, going into making my own body care products. As I was going through university, I was doing all of this. And it was great because I had, you know, the time and the space to understand things. And then as I progressed in my degree in women's studies, then I was able to then bring in other things that were brewing in my mind, just sort of being a woman on the planet at this day and age, and understanding the history of like this beauty myth that has surrounded women, you know, going and looking again at the history of how our orgasms have been perceived or not perceived, or faked or not faked, like that whole gamut. Because my essay was really looking at the history and the philosophy surrounding it, rather than, you know, not like a technical paper. But it was really just fascinating stuff. And just to see how we, you know, these beauty myths that we have grown up with, and the marketing of the whole beauty industry that really preys on, you know, insecurities and fears, and folding that into understanding, like even in one class we had Our Bodies Ourselves as the textbook. So understanding the issues with IUD and birth control pills. And I just found like all of these areas overlapping and intertwining.
Yeah, it's a real rabbit hole, isn't it?
Yes.
So sun exposure is something I have heard you talk about a lot. Do you have maybe just a quick list of the benefits to sun exposure that you could rattle off?
Yes. I mean, it is so important. Our skin is designed to engage with solar rays. Mm. So that is a union that we need to continue and fortify and make sure we have time for it, just for so many different reasons, including care of the skin, including care of our innate immune system, including care of our microbiome. And it's something that we've sort of been lobbied into, this loss of sunlight. And it's something that since the 50s, 60s, 70s, you know, it's, and to this day, something that, you know, we've been told to avoid. And it's actually essential for us to live and to have healthy skin and healthy bodies. And we can't just take vitamin D supplements and think that we can just do that and not engage with the sun.
So my daughter was born in October last year, so I was pregnant right throughout summer.
That's great.
And with it being so hot and everything too uncomfortable to wear, I pretty much spent the entire summer completely naked. I'd guess I wore clothing for maybe an average of like 12 hours a week. So what I want to know is, what benefit did that have for both myself and my daughter, like the helio benefits, but also just not wearing clothes in general?
Well, yeah, so many benefits. I mean, the number one cause of juvenile diabetes is a lack of vitamin D for pregnant mothers.
Wow.
So you prevented that.
Yeah.
And then you're helping your bones, her bones, because vitamin D has a real synergy with bone formation. And so that's needed.
Mm-hmm.
You've been able to increase your microbial peptides and your child's. So all those things, plus you've been able to, you know, do some, get the air going in around your body, which is great too. And just getting that engagement with the elements. Where do you live?
Portugal.
Nice.
Yeah, it's hot. Could you tell us what is sunburn?
So yeah, sunburn is when your skin gets red, and you want to avoid getting sunburned.
Mm-hmm.
But know this, it's much easier for your body and your DNA to process a sunburn than it is for your body to lie in the sun with sunscreen on all day. So also when we apply sunscreen, we take away our body's alarm system of telling us when we've had too much time in the sun as well. And the main issue with sunscreen, besides the chemicals that are getting baked into your skin and your endocrine system, is that it divides the UVA and the UVB rays, so that all you're getting are the UVA rays, which on their own, they can be sun damaging. The UVA, it's like, that's like if you're just, if you were in a car all the time in like traffic and it was sunny, and that your one arm's constantly getting hit by the sun every day through the window, that arm's going to have more freckles and stuff, because through windows we're only getting UVA light. And so when you're in the sun, you want that full range, the full spectrum of light waves, which to this day, you know, we don't even know them all. So we'll discover more and more in the years to come. But you do want the UVA and the UVB to be together, because that is when they can benefit the body. And it's the UVB that has the capability of engaging with your skin and creating vitamin D.
So what does a mild sunburn do to you? Like if it's only red for like a day and then the next day it's a bit brown, what has that done to you?
You're building up the melanin in your body, which is also, we're kind of like solar batteries ourselves, like our bodies. And so we need that solar charge. And where I am in Canada, you know, I definitely advise you get as much solar exposure in, you know, spring to fall as you can, because we need that charge through the winter.
Right, yeah.
It runs out. And so the melanin is something that our body needs as well. So we need to create the melanin for a healthy innate immune system, for our microbial peptides, and for skin protection.
Mm. Okay, so I'm from New Zealand, and in New Zealand we're affected by the hole in the ozone layer above Antarctica. So even though we have pretty mild summers, the days are probably average in the mid-20s, I think that's 75, 80 Fahrenheit, our skin, you know, it goes red very quickly, like 15 minutes would be like the max, and then I'm already starting to get red. So does this still apply in the southern hemisphere to the countries that are affected by the ozone hole?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And you want the melanin, because that's, you know, that's going to prevent, as much as you can get the melanin buildup in the spring, it's going to help prevent sunburns in the summer. And the melanins are ancient biological mechanism of photoprotection, and that's designed exclusively to support our relationship with the sun. So the cool thing, if you do, you know, the melanin in the skin is actually what transforms the absorbed UV radiation into a heat that's easily dissipated, and it allows us to sidestep any sort of like radiation damage that can contribute to cell damage. So far, far more effective than sunscreen is to build up your body's melanin base, and because that also further enhances other health systems in the body. There's an app called DMinder, and it calculates your geographical location, the current cloud cover, time of year, and all that kind of stuff, and it tells you how long to bask in the sun's rays, and how much vitamin D that will be generated that day.
Well, and is that global?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm going to check that out. Excellent.
Yeah, because it really does, like, you know, you do need to consider your geographical location, the current weather of the day as well.
Yeah.
And of course, because that the geographical location will take in your time of year, time of day, and all that kind of stuff.
Brilliant. Okay. Yeah. Sounds like such a good app.
Yeah.
Could we go back to what you were talking before about sunscreen? What are the dangers of sunscreen?
Yeah, so sunscreens are made from synthetic ingredients, which of course is not good because, you know, and that could be a whole other conversation, but it's going to affect, you know, your endocrine system. Some of the ingredients, you know, contribute to infertility. There's ingredients like oxybenzene, which is a very active ingredient, and it is not carcinogenic until it is exposed to sunlight. And that's one of the main ingredients in sunscreen, and that's also hard on the reef system as well. And then also sunscreens disable our skin's early warning system, mm-hmm. For, you know, letting us know when we've had too much sun. And of course, then the main issue is that most sunscreens block the UVB rays, which are the rays that we need. We need them in combination with the UVA. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in the long run, people wearing synthetic sunscreens can unknowingly overexpose their skin to UV radiation. And again, it's just the UVA. So it's getting, you know, they're not getting the full spectrum. So, you know, besides all that, sunscreens are also hazardous to the vitality of oceans. And a lot of them are actually being banned. There's some banning going on in Hawaii, which is good.
Yeah. Well, is that for the reef to protect?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. And Australia's Great Barrier Reef is really undergoing some of the most severe bleaching in history. Mm. So, yeah, it's very sad.
So a doctor once told me to avoid using sunglasses on young children because their eyes are still developing until they're about 7 years old. And I don't know if any of this is true, but to me the logic seemed to be then that children under 7 should avoid sunglasses to allow their eyes to develop naturally in natural light during those crucial years.
Yes, I would say longer than 7, and especially since a lot of children are inside all day being exposed to screens and fluorescent lighting, mm-hmm. that alone is going to be eye damaging. So for kids to get outside and to be able to receive the full spectrum of light is very important. Mm-hmm. And when we do that too, even adults, I recommend don't wear sunglasses until you really need, like, obviously for driving you're going to need them sometimes, mm-hmm. And sometimes you're going to want to look cool, but other than that you really should avoid using them and allow your eyes to receive light, because if you're going from indoors to outdoors and you're squinting, you're losing your ability to absorb the light. And also from the work on heliotherapy and tanning, there was a lot of good development around the turn of the century up until about the 1930s, when in 1902 the Nobel Prize went to Niels Finzen for his work with sun therapy, with heliotherapy. And then in the 1920s, Dr. Auguste Rollier really continued on that work of Finzen, and he opened these sun clinics in the Alps in Switzerland. And there, you know, thousands of people would go there, and they, you know, from children to adults, and they were curing, you know, tuberculosis, rickets, wounds, lots of diseases like that. And it was really, you can Google for pictures of the hospitals. Like if you do Auguste Rollier, Lisanne, Switzerland, those kind of words, mm-hmm. you'll see the photos, which I highly recommend, of the hospitals, which had these huge verandas and all the beds were outside. And if even the children were playing in the snow, they'd wear these kind of short, sort of diaper shorts. They weren't really diapers though, because they were like older children. And then some before and afters of where children are coming in with tuberculosis or rickets, and they're, you know, the bone formation is kind of deformed. Mm. And then they have about a year of sunning, and they've got it's black and white, but you can see the healthy glow. And then just the way their body formation has changed, it is incredible. And so what Dr. Rollier found is that there were so many healing benefits to being in the sun, and he would start people slowly because some people hadn't been exposed. So, you know, it's like we're exposing the calves for like 5-10 minutes a day for a few days, then doing the rest of the leg and moving the body into the sun that way. And he found none of the healing benefits took place if people wore sunglasses.
Wow.
Yes. And so there's a lot there, just as much as we have vitamin D receptors all over the body and inside of us, including places where the sun doesn't shine, but all those vitamin D receptors need to be brimming with the sunshine vitamin. And really the only way to do that, again, you can take the vitamin D supplements, but at some point you're going to have to engage your skin with the sun because it creates another type of vitamin D, which is water soluble, but the supplement is fat soluble. And that water soluble vitamin D also creates a very special and necessary cholesterol sulfate, a healthy one. And it helps to also purify and cleanse the blood. And now we know why 100 years ago they had all these results, because, you know, now we can see, because if our vitamin D receptors aren't brimming with vitamin D, then our immune system can be taken down because bacterial ligands will go into the vitamin D receptors that aren't full with vitamin D. And that basically trips up our whole immune system. So now we can see why the sun therapy was good for Epstein-Barr 100 years ago. And now we have a better understanding of like why that's happening on a scientific level. But back to the sun thing and the eyes, he found that people could still benefit from the sun, not like, not getting a tan, but from the full spectrum if they were in the shade, because it was still activating this thing inside our brain called the suprachiasmatic nucleus. But the sunglasses didn't. So I find that even, you know, even deeper reasoning. But definitely kids, it's like, you know, clothing them up and putting, you know, the block all over them and adding the sunglasses and a hat is like, sometimes that may be necessary, but they really need time in the sun. And I also find like, you know, kids are moving around. They're not like sun lounging like us adults. So if I, you know, for if Leaf's going to be out a lot, I'll do the nose, like the nose and then the top of the cheeks and maybe like the tops of his shoulders and stuff. But, you know, it's not like his chest is going to get a lot of sun because he's not lying on his stomach, on his back. You know what I mean? So think about how your kids are engaging with the sun. And, you know, definitely like, you know, the face may need protection, but the rest of the body might be okay because our faces are more sensitive. Or, you know, wearing a hat, but exposing some of the rest of the body, or exposing them for an hour and then applying a natural sunscreen or a hat or a shirt.
What sort of things are natural sunscreens? Is that like zinc?
Yeah, so the only natural option for a block is zinc. And what that is, a block. So it's not going to be like an SPF of, you know, 8 or 6 or 19. It's literally a block. And so what zinc does is it deflects the sun's rays. So it literally just bounces off of you. And you want to find, like we use a non-nanoized zinc particle. And that's important as well. And then hopefully that zinc is in a formula with a lot of other good ingredients. You don't want to have titanium dioxide in there at all. And then when you don't want to block, but you want to, you know, have something that's more than nothing, we have a formula called Everybody Loves the Sunshine. So we have Everybody Loves the Sunshine with zinc. And then we have Everybody Loves the Sunshine, which has no zinc. And it's a beautiful blend of botanical oils, rich in pigments, and ones that are known for their sun sun-engaging properties. And so interestingly, the word SPF is a term that can only be used for synthetic ingredients. So something natural can't even be called like an SPF. And yet, if we use that as sort of a way to understand, we can use it a bit. Like, so jojoba, coconut oil, and olive oil, those will kind of give you a kind of an SPF of about 6. So being in the sun with some jojoba, coconut, or olive oil will add to your time. Like you could probably get away with another, like just sort of like a normal, like European white person. You know, generally we tend to need a little, you know, we're not as good in the sun as like a olive skin Mediterranean European person. So for somebody like that, those oils could give like maybe an extra, you know, 10, 20 minutes, so to speak. So there's like kind of a botanical SPF equivalent in a way, but where we think of the Everybody Loves the Sunshine is that it's a sun harmonizer. And so it's going to, you know, harmonize your time in the sun. You can get a little more, you can squeeze a little more sunshine out of the sun, but the use of it is all going to depend on, you know, again, you know, your skin type, your geographical location, and the weather. So for some people, using the Everybody Loves the Sunshine is going to add another hour to their tanning. For some people, it'll be like 15 minutes. And what it also does, it helps to create like a beautiful golden tan, and it's also good for after the sun as well.
Okay. Moving along from the sun to more about general skincare, I would like to ask you about Cradle Cap. Both of my children have had it, as well as all of the children of my off-grid friends, and we all agree that apart from scraping it off with our fingernails, it's basically impossible to remove. But recently one of my friends suggested putting coconut oil on the child's head, leaving it on, then combing it out while washing it with water the next day. And that has literally been the single most effective thing I have found to remove it. But I have two issues here that you can probably clear up for me. The first is that historically few humans have had an overabundance of coconut oil that they were using to clean their babies' heads. So globally, what other natural materials produce the same effect? And the second question is, considering what a mission it is to remove, even using the coconut oil took me 15 minutes to comb off the bald head of my 7-month-old and much longer for my 3-year-old. So is this even something that we should be trying to remove, or does it serve a biological purpose, like protecting their scalps?
Yeah, those are all great, great questions. And yeah, I've known a lot of babies that have it. And it could be a bit of a modern situation because of it's kind of a fungal thing. And, you know, if our grandmother had antibiotics, then that's going to affect our gut microbiome. So it is sort of hard to sometimes find these, like, where, you know, what's the natural, you know, where did we as modern humans sort of go off track? So that's can't always be traced. What our people in our community have done is that we have a product called Doodab, which is just a beautiful essential oil blend that people use on their face for different things. And a couple drops of that has taken it off. Probably in similar ways the coconut oil. So that's been a little miracle for many people. And no, I think we can clear it because, you know, it's just sort of clogging the area, but you definitely, you know, always want to be gentle with it and sort of have it removed. We don't want to like scrub our little baby's heads or anything like that.
Yeah.
And also you really don't need to use shampoo on your kids at all. And if you do, of course, you want it to be real and without sodium lauryl sulfate. We make a lovely shampoo, but I wash my son's hair, and he's over 10 now, but he's not quite a teen. And he, we maybe wash it once a year.
Yeah.
If, you know, and it's more like, oh, it's like, but like we never washed his hair as a baby or anything. And so I think that really helps because you want, you know, the scalp to find its sort of natural balance and its natural oils. I can't say what'll happen during the teen years, but he has such a healthy scalp and healthy hair. And it's just really neat to see how you don't have to fall into that situation.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, we're the same with our 3-year-old. We probably wash it once or twice a year, and people look at it and say, oh, it looks so nice. Have you just washed it? I'm like, no, I brushed it.
Exactly. Yeah, we definitely have been overdoing it on the ablutions as a society.
Okay, so something I'm sure you get asked about a lot is diaper rash. I'd like to promote elimination communication because it's quite a good way to avoid diaper rash. But what other insight can you offer?
Yes. Well, again, it's this thing of like, we're sealing the babies up a little too much. You know what I mean? Like protecting them. There's definitely things you got to protect your child from, but like outdoor dirt and sunshine and fresh air ain't one of them. You know, obviously sunshine to a certain extent. Obviously there's a time limit for that, but these little bums, they need fresh air, and they don't want to be in like polyester diaper, like plastic diapers. The skin cannot breathe. And so, you know, even if it's in like, that's why elimination communication is also useful. But maybe, you know, right after the child has peed, you can then know you've got a few hours and let that child eat, even if it's like, you know, in the winter, then let them roam around inside the house without the diaper on, because even that's going to give it some air and circulation. But hopefully you can get that little bum outside, fresh air and some sunshine, and it will go away really quickly. Also, you know, avoid using wipes because they have chemicals on them. What we did was we cut up an old flannel sheet into squares, and then, you know, after removing, well, we would just wash it and stuff, but we used our best skin ever, which is a beautiful body oil that has so many purposes, but you can use like olive oil or coconut oil once again, and you wet the cloth and then you put on like a squirt of oil and then you cleanse the area that way. And it will remove everything, and it will also create a nice barrier and prevent diaper rash. And if you do have a diaper rash, we also make a beautiful thing called Jai Baby Joy Balm, and that clears it up right away. And then other things, you could just see maybe the urine is a little bit too acidic, so there could be some dietary changes to do as well.
Now, this kind of relates to what we just talked about before, but washing a baby with what and how frequently?
Well, you don't need to wash the baby at all. But bathing is always fun because you definitely need activities as a new mother or father. You're like, okay, what are we going to do now? We're going to have a bath. My son still has a bath every day because it's like, that's a good half hour to an hour of, you know, occupied time. And then we put magnesium in his bath and a little bit of baking soda, some frankincense. Give him an audible book, and he's good for a while. So it's a fun activity to bathe, and you can put like a little bit of salt in the baby's water or a little bit of baking soda, but you don't need soap. Babies do not need soap ever. So, you know, if you need to remove dirt or anything like that, use that oil and cloth method for their bits, you know, even their bits and that kind of thing. Like even, you know, for, like a girl's vagina, that kind of thing. That is a way. Water and oil on a cloth is so much better than introducing soap to that area.
Okay, so then is there ever a point where soap, shampoo, and conditioner are even necessary?
Well, yeah, it's hard to say. You know, I haven't gone all the way yet because Leif's not a teenager yet. So they're, you know, and obviously at some point, you know, he is soaping his parts, so to speak, but we use a natural bar soap, a clay soap. So, you know, you always want a natural bar soap in your home because you're going to need to scrub your nails and that kind of stuff. So that's obviously, yeah, so scrubbing nails is fine at any age with soap. And then we'll see about the shampoo and conditioner. I have a feeling we'll see what happens at teenage years. And of course, all of us adults need a little bit of soap and shampoo because we have been doing that our whole lives. So we, you know, there is a no poo and no shampoo. There's the no poo method of shampoo. And I do have that, that method in my Renegade Beauty book. But a lot of people even on that find, you know, even they are washing their hair a few times a year with that. So, and I definitely, you know, we do need to reconsider soap. You know, we need that in our house. We got to keep our hands clean, that kind of thing. And you want to really just keep it to pits and bits because we don't need soap. Like we have to think about our skin's microbiome. And so like our arms and legs, they do not need soap. The skin does not need soap in that area. There's no benefit to that. And another thing we kind of have to get over is soaping our face. Because again, that's just sort of messing with the microbiome, the skin's microbiome on the face. And now there's just so much awesome research going on with the microbiome. And now what scientists are discovering is that all those surfactants that we have been scrubbing our face with, whether it's like something harsh, like some kind of harsh acne cleanser that you had to have a prescription for, or whether it's this gentle foaming face wash from like a quote unquote green beauty brand at the health food store, all of those surfactants are creating microscopic splinters in our stratum corneum, which is that top layer of our skin that's just so, you know, so thin, but so much activity goes on there. And so these microscopic surfactants are not getting rinsed away when we rinse our faces with water after the soap. And they build up and build up day after day. eventually leading to microbiome imbalances that could lead to things like melasma, dry patches, eczema, acne. So we really want to reconsider how we're caring for our skin, and especially our face skin.
Along the same lines of soap, 18 months ago, I began using soap nuts instead of laundry detergent.
Uh-huh.
And I really like how I know that there are no nasty chemicals, but most of all, I like that our clothing and linen does not have that nasty smell of laundry detergent anymore. And then, you know, they add in these chemical lemony scents to give washing the disguise of being clean, but it's so nice now to have clothes that, you know, don't smell at all, and you realize, this is how clean clothes actually smell.
Yes.
Soap nuts originate from India, but like I said earlier about coconut oil, not everyone has access to them. So globally, what other natural resources produce similar results? And what do you use for washing your clothes?
We actually use the soap nuts as well. There are
Nice.
Yeah, there are a variety of soaps that create saponins.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, like, quite a variety of plants, including yucca root. But the soap nuts seem to be the best situation, right, for washing, like a natural method right now on the planet. But soap also is pretty ancient.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's an oil. It's basically an oil as in its roots. And so it has been around for thousands and thousands of years. But what people before that invention of soap used to cleanse their skin was oil. And it would be whatever oil was sort of the oil of that culture.
Before we begin to wrap things up, I have one question that if anyone can answer, it'll be you.
Yeah, I hope so.
I often breastfeed my children when we're both naked, and now that there are two of them, I'll often be out walking with my eldest while I'm nursing my youngest. And for any listeners who aren't familiar with breastfeeding, while the child is feeding from one side, milk is leaking from the other side. And so every time I walk around nursing, I'll see that milk drip down and it lands on the genitals of the child I'm carrying.
Okay.
And it's such a primal scenario that has made me wonder, is there perhaps a biological purpose to that leaking milk landing on a child's genitals?
Oh, you know what? I don't know. I haven't thought of that. I imagine it is I don't know. I just know the children don't mind that milky haze, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I think, you know, there'd be a scent, there'd be pheromones, there'd be so much information coming from your breast milk that I think it would just really just send sort of more primitive messages of well-being.
Okay, that's at least something. What is a widespread misconception about baby skincare?
Well, the one thing is when they're first born and they have this beautiful, like, sort of probiotic patina all over the skin, the vernix, and that don't rinse it off right away. Like, just leave it on and it will go, you know, and you can have a bath in a few days, but keep that on the baby. It's you know, got all the fresh genome information from coming down the birth canal, and so you want to keep that intact. And hospitals, you know, they right after the child's born, they rinse the baby. And that is not something that you want to do.
And what could be changed at a large scale to encourage a more natural approach to infant health?
Well, I think, you know, just more education about pregnancy health and also more education around, you know, the having babies, like in the birthing moment, and sort of that care for the first 6 months. In my book, Renegade Beauty, I do have a chapter on pregnancy and then what to do right after the birth as well. So there's some good tidbits in there and a lot of resources that can take you further into your journey of understanding more things around that area.
That was going to be my next question. Could you tell us a bit more about your books?
Oh, sure. Well, I have the Holistic Dental Care book, and that's pretty much as the title suggests. And it's a great, you know, great easy to read primer on all the things that you need to know about really taking care of your teeth at home and for your family. Mm-hmm. And then my more epic book that just came out last year is Renegade Beauty. Mm-hmm. And it's chock full. It's over 400 pages, and there's a full chapter, you know, the beginning opens up with a lot of understanding about, you know, how, you know, our bodies and really how we're a part of the cosmos and how our bodies are made up of the elements. And then to really revive our beings, we want to engage with those elements, something I call cosmoetics. And then we take you into like understanding the history and the mystery of beauty from the Milky Way to the microbiome and understanding the moist envelope of your soul, which is your skin. There's a whole chapter dedicated to the sun and skin. There's a whole chapter on teeth and oral health, which has got some new things that weren't in the original book. There's a whole chapter on breast health. There's a whole chapter on vaginal health. A pregnancy chapter, a chapter on like floral consciousness and perfume. Then there's the Renegade Beauty Realms, Renegade Beauty Secrets, Renegade Beauty Recipes. And then there's a whole solution section from like A to Y of like from acne to yoni care, it's everything in between from like thyroid to body to diets to just all, you know, hair, eyes, like all those things. So it's just like, I just put everything that I know so far is in that book.
Oh, cool. Where would you like people to buy it?
It's on all, you know, the Amazons around the world. And then we also mm-hmm. have our website, livinglibations.com,
yep.
which the books are on there. And you can email us any kind of health, beauty, or dental question. And if you want even more than that, we do free half-hour consultations.
Wow.
So, and there's also a lot of articles on the site as well to get you started before any books arrive, like on how to find a dentist, or there's even some Sun articles that can recap some of the stuff that we've discussed on how to interact wisely with the sun.
Okay. So I will put links in the show notes to, well, to everything you've just said. also the Living Libations website and Instagram pages.
And we ship all over the world every day.
Excellent.
You know, to Australia, New Zealand, Europe.
Oh, wow.
And then we also have some resellers in those countries as well.
Oh, yeah, good to hear. Nadine, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me today and share your knowledge with us. If you're open to coming back in the future, I'd love to talk to you about dental health. Do you have any final words for the listeners?
Just thank you so much for listening. And yeah, I'd be happy to come back and talk about dental care. If you have any questions, we're so here to help.
If you enjoyed this episode, you can join the discussions on our Facebook and Instagram pages. To hear more, subscribe for free on the podcast app on your smartphone. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and all of your favorite podcast platforms. If you would like to offer feedback or suggest a guest, email us at untaming.podcast@gmail.com.